The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Striga, of course from cagematch.net as well as purolove.com. Gotta get that in here. And I'm, as always, joined by my man on my side here, my beloved co-host, Dylan Fox from the Eastern Lariat Patriot.
Yes, that's true. I also occasionally do things on Cage Match as well. Yes. Thank you to all the people out there who listen to the show, especially the New Year's show that we did, which was a fun experiment to do. Not even an experiment, just a fun endeavor would be more accurate. I'm very grateful to all the people out there listening, you know, following our Twitter, checking out the show. Especially on the Patreon, that's always a lot of fun, doing a lot of big shows on there, covering a lot of different stuff, whether it's, the big shows. Obviously, the show we're going to talk about is, you know, basically the biggest of the year in Japanese wrestling. You read the title of the show. You guys know what we're going to talk about today. But also on the Patreon, we cover a lot of different and interesting things in the world of wrestling, and particularly Japanese pro wrestling as well. So lots of good stuff going on there. And hopefully everybody's having a good day, good time. Now that we're in 2023, tons of wrestling that's happened. Most of it at least interesting, if not good. So we will see how things stack up for the New Japan show and what we've got to say about it.
Exactly. It's let me put it this way, Dylan. This show, it's just two guys reviewing this this endeavor of New Japan Pro Wrestling.
I refuse to accept this. This feels too similar to another group. That has come out. I feel like this could be gimmick infringement. So, why are you attacking?
Apologies to Five Guys. I'm sorry.
Yes, Five Guys. Yes, I think that is something that we need to discuss when we get to that point. Is there a war coming? Not in wrestling, but in hamburgers. Is Tai Chi finding a new endeavor to do?
We'll see. Who is the hamburger of the group? That's going to be interesting. Yes, but first, of course, before we go to anything from New Year Dash, Dylan, I want to ask you this. I wasn't too excited in the weeks before Wrestle Kingdom, but as the morning approached of January 4, I suddenly felt this excitement that I had felt in years before when I got up in the morning to watch the New Japan Rumble. And I felt this excitement, and the show itself, I think, proved that feeling excitement for it was, for the most part, deserved so. How was your experience watching Wrestle Kingdom? Did you feel any excitement going into?
Yeah, going into it, I was not as down on it as you were. We talked about this very briefly after we recorded our last episode a few days ago, and I could tell that you were not very excited about the show going into it. I think the part where I got most excited, and I hope you did see this because you told me you didn't beforehand, was the press conference before where Ospreay cut a pretty gosh darn amazing promo on Kenny Omega for their match, I would say.
That's one of the parts that got me excited in the end, because like after we went off the air with our last show, I watched it before going to bed on the 3rd. So I woke up on the 4th being excited for at least that match.
Yeah, and I think that was the match that had the most buzz in the grand scheme of the wrestling fandom. Well, that was clearly the match everyone was looking forward to most. But going into it, there were some things that I was pretty excited about, wanted to see. I wasn't like fired up on it. I thought the show looked okay, and I had hoped that things would over deliver in some cases. And so, yeah, I was, you know, maybe a 4 or 5 out of 10 on my excitement going into it. But that was an upgrade after that promo, I thought.
Yes, exactly. That promo, I thought, was very well delivered. I got to think that he just didn't come up with it on the fly, because lots of these points sounded like he read that off a list. But still, though, the emotions during the promo were probably real. So very good stuff from Will Ospreay there. Also great stuff after his match, where he was very broken down. And yeah, that is one of the hooks, definitely, of the show. The attendance before the show, lots of people speculated about 25,000 people. It was a little bit more than that, 26,085 fans in attendance. We can't really like put it in perspective with the last years, because the rules of the pandemic had been very harsh in Japan, and in some cases are still very harsh. But the last non-pandemic Wrestle Kingdom did over 40,000 in 2020. It was right at the beginning of the pandemic in East Asia, at least. Still, though, I don't think that you can really compare these numbers, because Japan still isn't, much like I said, still not out of these restrictions that they implied. So 26,000 is probably a good draw for the Tokyo Dome, for New Japan Pro Wrestling. What I took from it, though, is that this is probably the amount of people that are willing to go to a Tokyo Dome show on January 4, plus minus a few thousand, I would say, that go to these shows because they go to the Itinjon shows, because they go to the Tokyo Dome on January 4 out of a habit. And they know New Japan Pro Wrestling will be doing a show there, and so they go. Of course, with a match like Will Ospreay and Kenny Omega, they might catch some fans that have dropped off since, for example, Kenny Omega left. But overall, though, I think that this draw, New Japan could get more fans into the venue had they built a better overall card, and especially a main event that people would have cared for.
Well, yeah, I think that was the major red flag on this show going into it, was just how poor the main event was, just in terms of interest. You know,
and they didn't even like try to hide that.
Yeah. And I mean,
they were very aware of the fact that this match was not going to be anything special, which raises the question why they did the title change in June.
Yes, and I think that's another issue. We'll probably get into the main event, but I think that was the thing that really hurt the show going into it, was just how bad the main event was and came across, and just very flat. And I think that you know, whatever draw there was, it wasn't because of that match. It was clearly because of the semi-main, you know, whatever bonus they could have got. I will say that I think this was a little higher than I expected, personally. It wasn't like this show-stopping number or anything like that that was this, you know, big statement. But I did think it was pretty successful, all things considered, because of where they've been and what they had on the card. Because, like I said, outside of that match, a lot of the matches were not, you know, super, you know, like some of them had potential to be good on paper, but none of these matches were super hot, I would say, and you know, outside of the semi-main. So I do think they deserve a lot of credit, I have to say. But the overall standpoint of New Japan on January 4th, I think there's some truth to what you're saying, and it'll be interesting if they, like you said, they themselves didn't even really try to run from what we're saying about the main event. So it should be something that they take note of for next year, I would argue, is that they need to really focus on getting a hot main event next year, like a, you know, the main match overall. And I think if they could do that and hopefully have a semi-main event that can at least be on the level of a good semi-main event, I don't think it'll be on the level of this match, especially for a lot of foreign fans, obviously. We're very excited about that. But yeah, in Japan, like I said, this wasn't a blow-away number, but it was a good one, and a little bit higher than I expected, to be honest.
Yeah, and apparently, at least according to the English New Japan website, this had the most unique new viewers for a New Japan World show to it in the history of the streaming service. So the interest, especially from outside of Japan, was clearly there.
I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of that is because of Mercedes and a lot of her fan base. I saw a ton of people that had nothing to do with Japanese wrestling talking about that. And I said it before the show, her fan base is among the most dedicated and intense of any wrestlers. So yeah. I knew they would follow her no matter what happened. And I do think that played a big role in it.
Yeah, for the first time in years, I came across instructions, English podcast instructions, that let people through the process of registering on the New Japan World. So I hadn't seen that during the pandemic. So the growth through her signing definitely was there.
Yeah, I personally am very happy to see a lot of these new fans, you know, give Japanese wrestling a chance, you know, on January 4th. You, like you said, probably, you know, like something that we had not seen for a while with the instructions, as you said. And I think that definitely played a big role in it. A lot of people who never would have even seen New Japan before signed up for this show. And we'll see how long that surge lasts, what they could do with it. But I do think the combination, and that was a very well-played booking of the card more than anything else. Not maybe as much for the Japanese fans, but for foreign fans, the Omega Osprey was something that's been talked about for a long time now, and Mercedes has her hyper-dedicated fan base that will follow her. So I think that the combination of those two things set the stage for this to be a landmark show in terms of subscribers to World and fans all around the world checking it out. I just wish that they had had a better main event for the local fans overall.
Yes, let us go to the main event first here. I'm going to tackle this from top to bottom. Okada defeated Jay White, much like, I don't know if anyone expected anything else from this match. This, when they ran through the undercard, basically all undercard matches were 10 minutes with the glaring exception of the IWGP Women's title match, which got a 6-minute match, which was, I fail to like say anything about that. That is not insulting in any way. But poor Kairi and Tam, especially Tam, because she got beaten in a 6-minute match. Man. Yeah, everything else on the undercard, main midcard, basically was around 10 minutes, which was funny because they had this 15-minute time limit in play for the New Japan World Television title. But when all the matches are 10 minutes, you don't really need a 15-minute time limit. So by the point of this fifth or fourth match, it was already clear to me that both main event matches would be getting at least 30 to 35 minutes plus entrances. You were at about 80 to 90 minutes for the two main events, very long for both matches. And you could clearly see that by the start of the real main event, of the main event on paper, I gotta say, Okada versus White, lots of people had already checked out, because not only had you seen this incredible Omega versus Osprey match right before, but also before that, there was another real high-flying sprint match with the junior heavyweight four-way. So this match had to follow the US title, and it couldn't. There was no way this match could follow the US title. But the problem here is, of course, Okada had to be the one standing tall after the main event, after the last match. That was the plan all along, and they felt they had to go through it. And of course, the world title should be in the main event. We had this voting years ago, like in, I think it was in 2014, when the heavyweight title match between Naito and Okada was voted to be the semi-main underneath Nakamura and Tanahashi for the IC title. But here, there was really no question that the world title should be the main event. But the match completely suffered, A, from the match before, and of course, B, from it just being not anything that we haven't seen before, and being a very long, drawn-out match. I know that people have heard me say that a lot before, but I always like go back to this 18-minute Okada versus Jay White match. And we've talked about that yesterday on my German show, by the way, Straight Wrestling with Flosh and Morbo. Hi to you two. We talked about the fact that even during his US of J tour, Jay White tended to have shorter matches, which were much more interesting than these long drawn-out matches that he has in Japan. But here, he like for whatever reason, they feel like they have to do these 30-minute matches, and he's just not good at it. They have to like draw all this out. Then there is the part where he thinks he gets himself and the opponent over by just not stopping to talk. And one of my favorite tropes, quote-unquote favorite tropes, is, of course, Ghetto finally getting his comeuppance, Dylan. Finally, after these 4 years, after in every match, Ghetto gets his comeuppance. But now, he finally got his ultimate comeuppance. That is the thing about this match. There are so many tropes that they have done before. Nothing of that came original. Nothing of that felt organic. It felt like Okada and Jay White were doing their match.
Well, first of all, I got to praise you, Striga, for being able to basically run down the whole card and the build up to talking about this main event. I think you talked about every match on the card in some form or fashion just to get to this. The match, I don't know if I can offer an original thought that I haven't done before on these Jay White matches.
I do overall. Have one, but I will let you talk first.
Yeah, I would say that, like, obviously the semi-main event was they could not follow it up. Like, it just was not possible overall. And you saw that a lot with the crowd. It felt like they really wasted a lot of time early on, which Jay is very good at, of course, wasting time. It's one of his best abilities, I would say. And he did that a lot, and it was somewhat necessary to get the crowd back into it, but it just goes to show how uninteresting like this was going into it. I would say like this match was even heading into the show and heading after the last match, obviously. But other than that, I can see why this match had a high rating on Cage Match, to be honest, because they did the same stuff that they always do. So if you like their stuff,
sure.
Or maybe you're on some kind of emotional high of the show, maybe being what it was, I think it over-delivered on all expectations. You know, perhaps you came in with a good rating. For me as a fan, there was really nothing special about this, in my personal opinion. I would say that the only thing that I would say is a positive of this match, or something that really stuck out to me in a good way, was basically him doing a very similar... it's another thing that is not original, but still, I thought it was somewhat well done. The very end of the match,
yes,
where he would not relinquish the title to Okada, which was mm-hmm. obviously a direct callback to what the same thing that happened with Ibushi, when Jay White did a very similar thing, not wanting to let go of the title, and a minor show of respect, so to speak, afterwards, followed by him walking off with Gato. I think that was somewhat interesting. Like I said, I would not really interesting, but really more so well executed, which I'm not a big fan of his wrestling, to be honest with you, most of the time. And his execution in particular, I think, is not very good. A lot of his counter-based wrestling, which I think is very phony looking and not good overall. Now, Okada certainly deserves some guilt of this as well. They tried to make a big moment with him doing the Blade Runner. And the kick out of the Rainmaker as well. They tried, but I was not that into this. I mean, I'm not gonna say it was some horrible match or anything, but it's what they do, you know. And like, if you like it, you like it. And but for me, I'm not a fan of this at all. In the main event, maybe maybe the ending stretch maybe hit harder for some people. Anyway, but I just I'm happy that Okada is the champion. I think that's the true best part of all of this, is that Jay is not the champion anymore, because I think he was really an anchor upon this promotion, in my opinion, and somewhat very, very uninteresting as a champion. So
it's really puzzling, like, that they booked him like that, right?
Yeah, and it's the same thing. We talk about this like every year, I feel like, with a champion that probably wins it around June or so, which he did. And then suddenly their title reign goes flat because they had the G1 taking up a bunch of time. And then maybe they'll have one defense, you know, maybe two. Like, you know, that Shingo title reign, you had two defenses heading into it. But this one had one. It's like it's the same thing over and over with these, you know, this title reign was not about Jay White. It was about giving Okada an opponent to beat at the Dome. Like, that's the problem.
It was all about the chase.
Yeah, and not even the chase, really, just the moment at the end. You know, like, there was no real chase to it. It was just he got the Dome shot and won the title overall. Like, it was about the moment at the end. And that's what this whole title reign was really about, ultimately. But for some reason, they did what they do. He definitely was not a standout performer. And I go back to the Tama Tonga match in the G1 at the end, because if you look at that match, compare Tama Tonga's match to Jay White, which was the final of their block, to Tama Tonga's match versus Okada, which was the semifinal. Listen to the crowd in Okada's match compared to Jay White's, and you will see a large difference. And Tama Tonga much more effective against Okada than Jay White, because Jay White is very ineffective to the Japanese audience. And just,
it's crazy that after all this time, I mean, this is not some random guy that they brought in from the outside. This is a guy from their own dojo. And after all this time, he still is not able to really read what he needs to do to get over to these fans. And they seem to have this one idea with him. Yeah, but he also is very different. This Switchblade incarnation is very different from the incarnation at first. The first incarnation was not about like reading off some scripts during his matches and doing these long matches. That was not the original Switchblade. This version is somehow the only thing that they can come up with for him. And apparently, Dylan, it's dying in the second year in a row now.
But it's died every year. He's been bad the whole time. Like, even the original Switchblade. Go back to the Tanahashi match at the Dome. That sucked. It was bad. It died. Nobody cared about him or his act. And I think that that's been the story of his run in New Japan the whole time.
Yeah, gotta say that ultimately that is the story of it, yes. I want to say one thing, though, that I really liked about the match. I watched both matches for a second time in reverse order. And in reverse order, the heavyweight title match is actually pretty fun. So it really suffered from the positioning that it had. So they went into this match with Jay White coming out in white gear, yeah, while Okada dressed in black, of course, also due to the fact that he is kind of cosplaying Antonio Inoki. In the G1 final that Jay White and Kota Ibushi had, White was wearing black while Ibushi was in white. So the positioning there, the heel and face dynamic was very clear from the get-go. But in this one, that is also part of the reason why Jay White talks so much. He sees himself, that is the character that he played, he saw himself as the main character of this match. He saw himself as the main character while being the protagonist and the antagonist at the same time. The talking in the match, his character feels like brings his opponent over. That is what he did during the match, or what the character tried to do. And then there was this moment, you mentioned the finish of the match where he didn't want to relinquish the title. And what led to that was the final Rainmaker pose of the match, because the final Rainmaker pose of the match was not Okada doing it, it was White. And White did the Rainmaker pose and tried to do the Blade Runner from that. And he failed at that. But that put over that he was completely delusional and was not expecting him to lose this match in any way, shape, or form during the match. So he was completely going insane, and Okada benefited from that. So that part of the match gotta say I really liked, because it was a good character play from Geo-White, at least.
Yeah, I suppose so. I think that I can see why people give him so many chances, because on paper, there's interesting things to do with him, like, on paper. Just, for me, the match was really dragging at that point. I think that, you know, you have to be into this story a lot more than I was, I think, for a lot of this to really hit or come across. And after seeing, you know, some of their work so far in this match, I definitely was ready for this to end. I think that was my main point of reference there. But they did do some decent things, like you said, there. I think that Jay, as a character worker, like you said, he's actually an interesting fit if they wanted to do something, which, with the reports coming out, I don't think would happen. But I think if they would put him on Strong, that would be, like, as the face of that, like, a TV show, like, you know, kind of restrict him a little bit, I think would be good. And put him in an English-speaking audience, I think, would help a lot as yes. well. Like, more than anything, I think that would help his gimmick, at least. So, as a wrestler, I think, I don't know if I'll ever think he's very good as long as he does the do-si-do offense overall that he seems to love so much in all of his matches.
So what do you think is happening? Because at New Year Dash, obviously, he went insane once again. He went crazy over Hikuleo, and he challenged him to a loser leaves Japan match. Is the obvious thing happening that Hikuleo defeats Jay White, or is there going to be some shenanigans played and we get something that we probably don't expect right now?
Well, I mean, to me, the obvious thing is Hikuleo losing. After the reports that came out that WWE is interested in him, I think.
Oh, in him. Okay. I've not read these reports. Okay.
Well, it's been very popular online the last day. Obviously, when it got announced, everyone was thinking Jay might go. But I think
that changes my view of it. I've not come across these reports, to be quite honest.
Yes, it should be very easy to find on Twitter. Just look up Hikuleo WWE, and I'm sure you will be able to find many reports of that. And I think with that said, I think Hikuleo would be the one to lose. And Jay, the thing is, one thing I will give him a lot of credit for is he's very good at kind of keeping his character mysterious in this day and age, or very good at keeping kayfabe, so to speak. So nobody really knows his contract status overall. Yeah. And I think that's why it's easy, because it seems like a lot of times we've heard this reports of him, like maybe he'll go to a WWE or whatever. But I think that in this case, I find it hard to believe that he doesn't have a longer left on his contract. If you look at the timeline of when he re-signed, and they talked about the 7-year deal that they had. So I'm not sure how that would play out overall. I think if they, you know, like I said, I think he'd be interested if they just put him on Strong. But, that's a smaller audience for him, I would say. Like, I could see why he wouldn't want to do that. But
what is there that Jay White could do if he stays in Japan?
Remember a couple of years ago when he had that? This is another issue that now that we're bringing it up. But remember a couple of years ago after Wrestle Kingdom when he cut that promo that everyone liked? Like, probably one good promo that he's.
What I was alluding to, that he now once again died at the press conference. The character once again died.
Yeah, but after that first one, it's like he just came back.
That's why I'm asking.
I mean, that's probably what's going to happen once again, I would say. Well, yeah, but like I said, there's no version of him that will be good. I think he is more of an issue than any character or booking, in my opinion. I just don't think his work has been very strong if you look at his run in New Japan so far. For someone hailed as that, I don't see a lot of results on his end. But at least it would be more interesting if he did something different, obviously. But they've shown no signs of doing that. I didn't really get this was not the same as a couple of years ago. That probably cut at all.
No. It was different. But the idea of it is very samey, to be quite honest.
I mean, I just felt like this was another block in their Bullet Club storyline that they've continued to drag out overall.
Should have happened 2 years ago when they did the promo for the first time, but no.
It should never happen, because there's no heat to this whole, like, to anyone in this
Well,
group.
Yeah, but there is no heat to that group anyway, so...
That's what I just said. Like, there's no heat to any of these groups, so there should never be... It should never happen. You know, like, you know, they should get rid of all of this stuff and move everybody on, because I don't think the vast majority of the fan base cares at all about any of this. And we saw that in the main event, because nobody cared about his main event match at the Dome. So I don't think... If you... And he's gotten so many chances is another problem. You know, there's been nobody who's gotten more chances in wrestling than him at main event spots. And at this point, what else can you do? You know, like, I think
that's why, of course, the Hikuleo news is there. That is why I am still questioning, is Hikuleo really losing? Because I really don't see what you can do with Jay White if they just continue this path.
I think if it was somebody else, I might be able to buy into that. But Hikuleo has no future here either. So, you know, like, there's nothing you can do with him. Like, nope. You're not going to put Jay, like, you know, like, if that were going to happen, it would be somebody who has upside, you know?
Yeah.
That you could build upon this. Like, you're not going to build upon Hikuleo. You know, he couldn't even be, you know, he was secondary to Carl Anderson, somebody who's not even inside to the company at the end of the day. You know, it's like, so like, to me, if they were going to do something like that with Jay, it would be with somebody they could actually use it for, in my opinion. And maybe they'll surprise us all with that. And I think that, like I said, it would be more interesting to see him go away. for me especially, I think it would be a great thing for the company if he were not there anymore, just because they continually book him too strong and, you know, to his level, in my opinion. So I would like to see him go away, yes, but I don't think that's going to happen. And I think especially as long as Gato is around, as long as he's with Jay, that will always be he will always have a good standing in the company, because I think that's actually the real purpose of his push over the last few years, is that Gato gets to do stuff in main events.
That's true.
But maybe he'll turn. Maybe he'll turn to Hikuleo and Hikuleo will be Gato's new
maybe. Yeah, maybe. Who knows? Yes, but I guess that's enough about the main event. What did you think about the U.S. title match? Kenny Omega defeats Will Ospreay in 34-38 with a current total rating at Cage Match of 9.8.
Well, I mean, that says it all, right? that high rating for the match. And I think that, as I said, coming into it, that was the real main event of the show to everyone. I think even the most dedicated Jay White fan would have to say that the semi-main was what was most important overall. And especially after that promo. Like, even before that, just them announcing it already was the real main event. But the promo, I think, really added a lot to it. And also helped the match to see, like you said, it was something planned in all likelihood. But I think the emotion was real enough. That's all I need, in my wrestling. I don't necessarily need it to be real. I need it to feel real. Something similar would be Shuri and Julia, where it felt real, you know, like all of their emotions. And I think that's my one issue with an otherwise fantastic match of this, is that a lot of the emoting of particularly Omega, in my opinion, I think was too cartoony for me, especially him peeking through the table. That is what's obvious meme bait, you know, overall. I think that if they had made it more real, then I could, like, it would be a classic match, because they did so much right here to me that was like, I could, you know, it really was a fantastic match. And definitely a strong match of the year candidate already on January 4th. And to me, this was the best match of Ospreay's career, I would say.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think one of the better Omega matches. I don't know if it would be my number one pick for him, but it's up there. You know, a top five match, I would say, for him.
Probably debate with the match in which he won the heavyweight title back then in 2018.
Was that the 69-minute match?
Yeah.
That would be my pick, too. I would pick that over this as well. I agree with you.
Yeah. Still, though, I absolutely see where this high rating is coming from, because there's just a lot to hold on to. And I agree with you. Yesterday, when we talked about the match, I said the cartoonish part that you put over, of course, with the looking through the table stuff. Also, in the end of the match, it felt more like a boss fight in a video game. And I think the appeal for Kenny Omega is clearly there because he takes a lot from video games, of course, which we saw in his cosplay before the match.
Mm.
The finish of the match, there were really a lot of high impact moves, which you would see in situations in a video game where you load up your adrenaline and you do your special moves and stuff. But I absolutely agree there was a lot that these two did completely right in this match. And
Cut you off, but I think we need to start right away. Speaking of the stuff, what you mentioned with the entrance.
Yeah.
With that coming out, he came out with One Winged Angel, like Sephiroth's mm-hmm. theme song from Final Fantasy VII. Obviously, shout out to Crisis Core, which is one of my move names as well, but also a great addition to the series with Zack Farrah, a wonderful character in the main role, and Sephiroth as well. So we saw the One Winged Angel. He had the huge interest come out, and that came out. And you have to really praise the production team of New Japan here, because this felt like a true superstar entrance.
Fantastic.
And then Ospreay comes out with his old theme music, mm-hmm. Elevated. Which,
and the lyrics onto the Tron.
Yeah, exactly. Which was obviously like that brings up the old, you know, his old theme song pretty much coming in, his original song. And that came out. That felt like a huge moment as well. So right away, they showed you that this match, just in terms of this, never, like, there wasn't a single move done in this match. Like, at the very start, when they both got into the ring and they, you know, they were there to start the match and looked at each other, this felt like the biggest match of all time, pretty much. After the intros, the promos, the hype and the speculation from the foreigner fans and the native fans as well, really connected with both of these guys, this felt like a true, like, main event, not just in form or card positioning or anything like that. Their production values, the way they did the entrances, they made this match feel special. And that's something that you need in this day and age, because there's going to be great matches at every turn, basically. But they made this match feel special from the start. I think that's something that's very important. And I think a lot of people, it was 5 stars before they did a single move, you know, yes. You know, like it was already determined by the hype level pretty much. And I mean, and to their credit, they lived up to that
completely
that status with their match.
Yes. Like the movement within the match was completely insane. All the fluid motions that they did from power bombs to hurricane runners, it completely showed in that move where they stood on the ropes after Omega had already ripped the turnbuckle pad off. They stood on the ropes and they did this DDT spot onto the post, which requires incredible balance and incredible like precision to do a move like that. And afterwards, of course, Ospreay did the bleeding part, which put more drama onto the match. But not only this portion of the match, but the very start of it, when Omega worked over the body parts that Ospreay had hurt in the last couple of months. Remember, he had this kidney infection. He had to relinquish the heavyweight title last year due to this neck injury. And Ospreay worked over the back, the neck section, and the kidney section. And I especially like the kidney spot where he put the table over Ospreay's back on the outside. And then he marked the spot on the table with his foot to find the exact spot where he had to jump off from the apron with a double foot stomp onto that. That was pretty cool, I thought. He later used the table, of course, to look through it, but also to like jam it into Ospreay's bloody face, which was an incredible visual too. Then the drama of it just rose and rose and rose to the moment where it felt like that Ospreay would lose the match, but then he came back for one more adrenaline rush, and Omega had to really fight back. He had this eye swollen. I think Ian Hamilton, shout out to you on 411 Mania. We talked about that too yesterday in Spread Wrestling. He called it the obvious blade, which hit Kenny Omega in the face and got his eye swollen. To the finish where the defiant underdog babyface in that situation, Will Ospreay would not go down to Kenny Omega's flurry of offense that he really threw at him. And one more thing, we talked about the match Omega versus Okada from 2018. Omega did this one Tiger Driver, the Tiger Driver 91, is it? Yeah, the underdog pile driver, right? On Ospreay, and Ospreay got his foot on the ropes. And that reminded me of the one moment where Okada kicked out of, or not kicked out of the One Winged Angel, but got his foot on the rope because Omega did the move too close to the ropes. And this was very, very similar. And it also was shot in a very similar fashion, much like the foot on the rope on the One Winged Angel back then. So there were so many things that called back to matches before and even to real life things that happened to both of these guys, that this was just an absolutely exceptional match.
And this was a real moment for both of them, I would say, especially Ospreay. I think for sure this, he in his world and his life as a wrestler, this was the biggest match of his career, obviously. And it's something that they built up for a long time now. And they've done a great job of that. I also have to praise them and their thinking. You mentioned that table spot. That is also a callback to Omega's match versus Chris Jericho when
right.
he drove off the thing to the table. Yeah. And if you listen to their podcast they did afterwards, he mentioned that Ospreay had done a similar move in the match, in the junior match before his match, and he wasn't irked about it, but he mentioned he had an idea for a moonsault, but Ospreay did it, so he had to change it to a foot stomp. And he mentioned that years ago on the podcast Jericho and Omega did on Talk to Jericho about their match. So that was a callback to that. And I loved the way this match worked. In a lot of ways, this kind of also calls back to that Jericho match, except this time Omega is in the Jericho position
yeah.
of years ago. And Ospreay is that guy, because the whole build to this match was Ospreay saying that he left New Japan high and dry, and he was the one that carried the company as the top foreigner. Pretty much for a long time. So it's a very similar story to what they had with Jericho and Omega, just with Omega and Jericho's role now. And I have to say, I thought, unlike the main event we talked about, these guys, I thought, did kind of subvert a lot of the tropes that I was expecting in the match. Mm-hmm. And particularly in terms of just how, not one-sided is not completely accurate, but Omega took a lot of this match.
Yeah.
To really put over Ospreay as that strong babyface that you mentioned. And I think that it's fantastic how they were able to, you know, it wasn't just the moves, but they really put a lot of thought into it.
Exactly.
Well,
it was not like these two, they in a lot of their matches, they often fall into these habits of exchanging a lot of moves. And sometimes they give their opponents a lot of offense as well, just to do moves in a lot of ways. But this was not one of those matches. There were a lot of moves, but much like you said, they put extreme thoughts into these moves and how they did it and at what point in the match they were doing these moves. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's... I think this was, you know, when you look at this match overall, and it's great to see because, you know, if you are an AEW viewer, you'll see Omega largely in this trios role right now, which that the way they're facing, you know, they did put some thought into their matches, but definitely those matches are more so about those big spots than a match like this, which has a lot of psychology to it. And I'll just say that I think that the match really was a testament. I got to, first of all, say congratulations to both of them for putting on a fantastic match and solidifying the show, I think, in a lot of people's minds. And I think one of the better Wrestle Kingdom matches overall, I would
yes,
say.
Absolutely.
You know, like in any of them, you know, it would be right up near the top. There's one I would pick above it, but it's right there. You know, it's one of the greatest Wrestle Kingdom matches of all time. And I'm not surprised at the reaction in the slightest. I think they both, you know, like I said, I probably am a little lower than some people on it, but not by that much either. Like, I don't think
9.8 is an all-time match, right? So
yeah, exactly.
Even being a little lower is still calling it a match of the year candidate.
Yeah, it's definitely a match of the year level match. I will very likely remember this by the end of the year. I'd be surprised if this isn't in my top 10 at least. You know, and it could be way up there. It could be the match of the year by the end of
yeah,
it, for all we know.
Could be.
And I think another thing I have to say too, another great psychological thing I was going to point out. They actually, despite how great this was, they smartly saved some things as well in their back pocket. Noticeably, the Stormbreaker that was specifically not hit in this match, which is an obvious setup for their rematch, which I certainly think will take place at Forbidden Door in the main event for real. I would say, like, the writing is right there to make an amazing main event between the two. I would say, like, I definitely think this feud will continue. Overall, is where I'm going with this. I do not think this is the end of the story for Ospreay and Kenny Omega. I think that Ospreay will get his big win eventually over Omega, and I think it's going to be great. I do agree with someone on Twitter that messaged us, though, because I had this exact same thought, where they did such an amazing job of Ospreay in this match. He is at a different level than he was when he actually won the title the first time as a wrestler and performer and just the over with the crowd. I didn't like how they went to the heel stuff on the day after. I think that took away from his – it didn't take away from the match, but it took away from
him.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Just not even from him, just him as a character would be more accurate. You know, him as a performer, nothing against him, but the character, I think, took a big hit by doing that. I think they had lightning in a bottle after that match with him, the bloody, defiant – like you said, the defiant baby face at the end. The stage was set for him to be a top-tier main event level guy for real, not just because they pushed him there, which is what happened last time. I think he's at a much different level now. And we talked about on the Year End Show, I picked him as the best foreigner of the year. I think he did a lot of great things for New Japan, carrying that U.S. title, which once was a dead title overall. And I think now it feels like, you know, a true... like, maybe not as big as the world title, but a very good secondary belt. You know, a very, very high-ranking secondary belt, I would say, at this point.
So shout-out to Forkboy84, who made that statement. What do you think is next for the title, for Omega, and for Ospreay?
Well, they set up the thing with Taichi on the next show, their faction. And it is worth mentioning, too, on Ospreay's entrance, he was joined by the entire United Empire. At the top of the ramp on his entrance as well. So they're clearly going to go with that faction for a while. I think that Omega, because they do have the trios thing going on at AEW, it's going to be interesting how they play that, per se. I think he'll definitely bring the title onto TV. I just I wonder what kind of room they're going to have for him to do all this stuff. Overall, but I do think that it's going to be a deal somewhat like a touring belt, but only within the one promotion, pretty much, where it's like he does matches. I don't foresee there being any big storylines for that belt
in a
while, but I think he'll defend it every that I could definitely see that, you know, once in a while they'll put him on Rampage for a title match against some random guy, you know, pretty much.
They also build up the match Jeff Cobb challenged him after the main event of New Year Dash. So that's going to be a program. Whether that's going to be on one of the US shows or whether that's going to be on AEW remains to be seen. I don't think that they have announced anything yet. No, they did not.
Do you think that Omega will do more stuff in Japan?
I think he will be back for big shows, because I definitely see him as someone who could challenge Okada this year.
And they totally set that up. With them teaming.
Yes. And that was another great moment, by the way. It was so obvious when Cobb and Hinari had come out and Omega had come out. There was only one person left that hadn't been on the card yet. And the people still went completely mental when the coin dropped. Yeah. And that just shows the importance of Okada being champion. Absolutely. Because even though it was so blatantly obvious that it had to be him, people still went completely crazy. And nobody can take that away from him. And he's just the number one guy in the number one company in the world. So at least in
Japan,
without talking about America, of course. But still, though, the point stands that that was such a great moment to solidify his position on top. And Omega acted a little bit shocked. That was funny, too, because who was there backstage that hadn't wrestled yet? But also great positioning, by the way, for Hinari. I think he really deserved that position because he still, though, even though he's in the Empire, he didn't get a lot to to do in recent months. So being the main event was cool for him, for Jeff Cobb, as well as being one of the top utility players really in the company, to always be ready to challenge for whatever belt he's going to challenge for. So that is going to be a thing definitely to look out for. Flosh, his idea was to set up the heavyweight title match between Okada and Ospreay for Forbidden Door this year.
Okada and Ospreay at Forbidden Door?
Yeah, Okada and Omega, sorry.
Oh, okay, well, that would be interesting, because I think Omega and Ospreay, the rematch, has more value to it, to American fans than Okada and Omega. I was going to say, I think that needs to be a match in Japan, like Okada defending the title against Omega.
Yeah, and I think that the Ospreay and Omega match definitely also has a value, but I can also see that, because they did it once this year in this positioning, I can see that once again going to Flush, because that was one of his ideas too. I can see that one of being the one front runner for the main event for Wrestle Kingdom next year in a different positioning, with Omega being the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion and Ospreay coming in as the G1 champion.
Oh, that would be interesting if that was the way they went about it. That would be really interesting if they did that. I didn't even think about that idea of Omega actually winning the title, like the main title. That would be very, very cool, I think, honestly. Like, if they were patient enough to wait for that, I think that's a great idea.
I mean, imagine Wrestle Kingdom with that match, back-to-back years, and an interesting Okada match on the card.
Yeah, I think the interesting Okada match without the title is going to be interesting, how they can do that. Yeah, but I mean, there's stuff they can set things up.
So many titles, you can just win any title you wants to.
I think he's above the other titles, like, you know, pretty much. Like, he's not going to win any other title, I don't think, just because.
Can Okada win the New Japan World TV title is the interesting question. Can he have a match that's under 50 minutes?
I would love to see that. That's been one of my main criticisms of him, is that I would love to see him do different stuff. I always say go to the tag team division if they could do something like that.
I don't think that's happening anytime
soon. No. Obviously, we're years beyond that even being a possibility. But I would love to see. I mean, he's not going to the TV title. He's not doing anything except for the world title. Like, he's not going for any other titles. He's just too big for the others in their eyes. So I guess I kind of figured that they would do Omega and Ospreay at Forbidden Door, and then I do think Ospreay is the favorite to win G1. I thought him facing Okada would be the main event for.
I mean, they could do both. They could do Ospreay and Omega at Forbidden Door and in the Tokyo Dome.
Absolutely, I think that would be a great idea if they did that. You know, overall, I just don't want to see, because if that happens again with Omega winning the title in June. We've yet again done the same thing.
That's right. Yes.
Over and over, where I think at this point the title probably could use a little bit of a longer reign than just having a guy win it and have one or two defenses before Wrestle Kingdom. I would rather Okada.
They are so like deadlocked into their structures. They have they only have these few positions and few shows really that they do heavyweight titles in, and they haven't changed that in years. Mm-hmm. The pandemic to a degree helped them, because they had to push the G1 back, but now that the G1 is back in August, they are once again in their old structure of just having these few title matches until the G1, then the G1, and then one or two more title matches. I don't think that's changing.
Which I think is why it's important for Okada to keep the title, so we don't run into the same thing that we've seen all the last couple of years. But I mean, like I said, I like that idea, though. Like I said, if they are able to hold out for the rematch for next year's Dome, that to me might be the best business idea. Like, if I were running the company and I were trying to get the biggest match possible, I think that would be a great idea, you know, overall. So it's I just wonder. You know, can they really hold out? And would AEW also, because I think that they would push for Ospreay and Omega for Forbidden Door overall, because, you know, that is it's going to take place in America in all likelihood, the Forbidden Door too.
Yeah.
So like, they're going to think about that audience as well. So it'll be interesting. I think there's a lot of interesting roles they could go with all three of those men, whether it's Ospreay and Omega as well as Okada. And I think that's a great thing. And it, like you said, I totally agree with what you said about Okada being the man in New Japan, which unfortunately is exactly what we said last year when he won the title.
Yes.
remember that their attendance numbers were low for a long time, and then when he won the title, suddenly that February we saw a big uptick in a lot of the attendance figures there. So I think that he's in a very, very important piece of the puzzle in New Japan, and a rightful champion for sure. So I think that with all three of those guys kind of being revolving around the main event, and definitely Okada, Omega, it's going to be interesting to see what he actually does in Japan. But I think that him winning the title and main eventing the Dome, I think that's a very interesting and bold idea if they do that.
Yeah. Now that you're said it, that Okada is at the same position than last compared to last year, and we're talking about like Will Ospreay. Of course, he's a top foreigner, but Kenny Omega is a guy from a different promotion. Let's talk about some of the younger talent here on the card. We had in the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title four-way Master Wato. Then in Keiji Muto's last match in New Japan Pro Wrestling, we had Shota Umino, who picked up the win, unlike Master Wato. And also, unlike Renarita in the New Japan World TV title tournament final. What I said a couple of months ago, when we talked about Jake Lee, is that they need a guy like him probably in his early to mid 30s to be one of those players that they can build up a main event scene or maybe a never title US title positioning scene with, and that they need new young homegrown talent. And here with these three guys, with Master Wato, with Shota Umino, and with Renarita, they had three possibilities to build up guys on this big show with the most eyes of the entire year on this show. And the only one that got a victory was Shota Umino. What did you think about these decisions?
Well, I guess just kind of going backwards, I think the junior title match was one of the matches that it was really the one match, in my opinion. Besides, I mean, the semi main event was such a high level, even if you had high expectations, I think it over-delivered. But I think the junior match over-delivered from what I was expecting it, unlike most of the rest of the card, in my opinion, where they had a really strong performance, but also Wato proved, like, all of the improvements that I've been seeing over the years, the last year or two with him, his ending segment. I thought he looked totally ready. The crowd was into him. They worked the match so smart with great near falls. I really think the wrong man won that match, in my opinion.
Not only the wrong man, but also the least interesting one, because...
Which is why he's the wrong man.
Yeah, exactly. Because we've seen that a number of times now. He's the fifth time he's the champion, and I think the fourth time he's won it at Wrestle Kingdom. We're back at square one with the junior title, basically.
Yeah, I there's nothing he could do that would be interesting with this title, ultimately. And Wato, this would have felt like a major moment at passing of the torch in the junior division if he were able to get the win. And unfortunately, they went away from that. But I did think the match was very strong. And Hiromu's a great wrestler. There's nothing against him as a talent. It's just that he's not interesting as junior champion because there's no new paths that he can go down at the end of the day. And I thought everybody worked well. You had Ishimori as the heel in the match.
I think he did a great job, actually. There was this one moment where he lured all of the other guys onto the stage, and they basically ran into each other like they were in a crash derby. And Ishimori was the one coming out on top and saying, I'm the smart one. Look at these idiots. So I really like that. Master Wato, I think, showed his potential to be a great underdog babyface in this match. Incredible Albright style German suplex for the near fall. That was a great, great moment. That is going to stick with him for the next couple of months, definitely, because people are going to remember that.
Well, I didn't anticipate a Brent Albright reference on this show, but I appreciate you making it, to be honest. But yeah, that was awesome. This was the return of Kawato. Not Master Wato. This is the return of Hirai Kawato, who was one of the best young lions, and was saddled with this horrendous gimmick that held him back and made people think less of him. But you can see, this guy was always talented. You know, like, he was... go back to his Young Lion run. It's just the gimmick was such a dud that everyone looked out of him. And they really had him doing a bunch of stupid stuff that they shouldn't have been doing anyway in the ring, trying to combine all kinds of different crap like into one person, like one wrestler. When him just being himself proved that the fans will rally behind him. He has something that's impossible to teach inside. And I think that he's a guy that you can do a lot of great things with in the future. I really think that was a mistake, personally. I also think one thing that – the only problem with that match that held it back from being truly great was, you know, it's a small thing somewhat, but there was a lot of talk. This is when they did the thing where they were like – they did this really cheesy, like, oh, I'm hearing something about a brawl in the back type of deal.
And yes.
Setting up the LIJ and Congo thing. But I thought that was like – that they focused too much on that, and it happened during that match, unfortunately. That was my one complaint about that.
Yeah, and also we have seen the four-way junior title match at prior Wrestle Kingdoms as well.
True.
So there was only so much that these four could really do to really wow the crowd.
And I think that's why we had low expectations for it, because on paper the talent is really strong. And we should have expected this kind of match from them. But I think this was probably the second best match on the show, to be honest with you.
It was great.
Yeah. Yeah, compared to the main event. Umino, you know, that was I've said this multiple times already in the past few months. Umino, to me, is the one they see as the star among all of these guys. Like, he clearly is the one they see the biggest upside in. I really think Narita is the best wrestler of between the two, but I think Umino is the one they see as a star. And he did win. The match was not anything special, in my opinion, but he got the win, and that was a nice thing. Muto ended up getting out of there pretty fast after the loss.
Incredible how Muto and Naito just didn't care about this match.
No, but the fans cared about Muto. He got one of the biggest reactions on the whole show.
Yes. What was your take that he went out of the ring so fast? Because we discussed that yesterday, too, and we basically came to the conclusion that he just should have raised Shuto Umino's arm, but he didn't.
What else is new?
Yeah, exactly. That's just him. I said it yesterday. He's just he just can't help himself. That's the guy.
Well, at least he didn't, you know, call anybody any slurs or anything.
That's for the winning fall here.
Yeah, oh, well, that too, you know.
And the match had one funny moment where Tanahashi turned heel by stopping Muto from doing the moonsault.
That's true. He's trying to save this man's...
turned heel in the eyes of the fans.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, they were like, no, we want to see the moonsault. Yes. Do you think that he'll do the moonsault on his retirement match?
I don't think so.
I think he will. I think his ego is so high that he can't... It's like he can't help himself.
He will get another double knee replacement surgery.
Oh, it's his last match. Yeah, obviously. Like I said, on there, like I said, I don't think it's the right thing to do. I think his ego is so high that he will have to do it.
I can't write it off.
Yeah, exactly. Like, obviously, for a logical person, no, that's a crazy idea. But for Muto, someone who look at his entire
career. The guy once owned a white tiger.
How about that? That's the info you won't get on the other shows. Yes. Muto's white tiger that he had. But yeah, overall, though, like I said, the match was not very special. It was a nice thing for Shota, but I didn't, you know, this. If he goes on to be a huge star, like a champion and a main eventer and all that, they may be able to look back at this as something. But as it is, you know, it'll be all in the follow-up for him more than that. The TV title match, you know, I remember when they had that tournament they announced, and everyone said that it was for the young guys, this title. And I remember saying, why is there so many 40-year-old guys in this tournament? And everyone said, oh, don't worry, Naruto's going to win the title. It's all about the young guys there. And, well, like here we are.
Here we are. It's the NEVER title version 2.
Exactly.
I was really disappointed with that, to be quite honest. Even though I know the tropes that they will go to. And this is once again one of those tropes that Japanese promotions fall into a lot when they introduce new championships, that there is a hot young talent that is ready to win the title, but then the first champion is a veteran, because they think that the right way to introduce a new title is to have a guy win it that is already established. instead of going the other direction and saying that this new title really fits this new guy really well and he can get over with the title. No, they do it vice versa. I don't really think that this was the right decision. Once again, much like I said initially, also I would have liked Wato to win. I know I would have liked Narita to win much more than I wanted Wato to win, because I really think that Narita is, he is not the number one project. You mentioned Shota Umino is, but still he is one of those guys that they need to position much stronger in this year. And with so many people watching this show especially, he should have won the title in my opinion. Whereas him taking the belt from Zack Sabre, Zack already built that up, that one day Narita is going to come for him and win the title. It's going to happen at a point where much less people will be watching. And I don't think that that is the best decision when you need to build up a guy like Renya Narita. Match itself, very strong, I thought. I think this was one of the top matches besides the Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay match. You can say that the four-way was great too. I really liked this match too. It had a much different flair to it. The finish took it down for me a bit, but there were many, many great bridges in this match. Narita's bridges are just gorgeous. Lots of kickouts out of European clutches and submissions from Zack Sabre Jr. Great stuff there. Once again, I'm sure he's going to be a great champion, but he definitely does not need the belt.
No, to me, I definitely feel that this is the match I was probably most looking forward to on the show. And I think I liked the junior match better because that overachieved, mm-hmm. and this one did not live up to my expectations. That okay. said, it was still a very good match. Like, you know, it was still like, you're not going to get a bad match out of these guys, ultimately. I do think your point earlier, like, you know, if we had said it here, I think, I would have said it as well. But I think all the other matches going so short actually made this feel less special than it would have in prior years.
Yeah, true.
Overall, because it's like everything got, now we're at the point of the card, everything got cut for time, like from this point on.
Yes.
So it's like, this match was not special, ultimately. Again, it will be forgotten. And I thought this would be a show stealer on paper, and it was not that overall. And I think Zach was not the... I totally agree that Narita should have won the title.
Yeah.
But
Shout out to Eric. Eric said that Zack Sabre Jr. Narita was his match of the night. Zack Sabre Jr. is one of the best technical wrestlers in the world. Narita has tons of potential. Very enjoyable match with great chemistry between the two. That definitely was there.
Well, shout out to Eric. I love that guy. Lots of love for rings as well. So that makes sense overall. he's a big ring.
Yeah, he also said that Oleg's debut was awesome. So yeah, that makes sense as well.
Oleg's debut was very good.
I will
agree with him on that for sure. And I like I said, I liked the match. Narita and Zach, that was probably, you know, like that was up there. It wasn't a bad match at all. It was a really good match, honestly. I just personally, maybe my expectations were a mm-hmm. little too high for it. And like I said, I think it would have been better if the other matches was able to stand out a little bit more overall in the card. But yeah, at least they did do something with Zach coming off the Suzuki-Gun thing with this TMDK deal, which I thought was something I didn't really think of just because TMDK was so low tier up to this point that I really didn't even think of them, but makes perfect sense in hindsight overall for him to join them. And I think it's a nice thing that they did there. I think that it's cool that they're starting some new angles, and that's one of them. The TV title, I think he'll be a good champion as well. You know, he has a lot of potential. This fits his style well as well. But I definitely would have been more enthusiastic if Narita had won, I would say, about the future of that. As it is, like you said, it's kind of like, okay, mid-card title. Like, pretty much. Like,
I mean, Tomohiro Ishii is challenging for it now. It is the never title, the second coming.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they've already established it. Like, they established a bunch of things in this match.
Yeah.
Like, Narita, they've slotted him. That you clearly see Umino is the bigger star than he is, and he's still a ways away in their kayfabe world of New Japan from even getting the TV title.
Yeah.
And they established the title itself. And I think we knew that anyway, even if Narita had won, it would have been this in all reality. But they did establish it as, like you said, a second never title, a mid-card act overall. But I would say the Narita and Ishii match was much better than this one overall. And I think they... Yeah, if we had seen that in the Dome at some point, I think that could have been that would have been a show-stealing level match overall. And hopefully we can get that one day. I will repeat what I said even after that amazing match, which was one of the best New Japan matches last year, was Naruto and Ishii. I think that he does. I really think that he needs to do. And I'm not saying get away from it entirely, but give himself something to not be so much like Shibata. You know, overall, like
he totally is. Yeah.
Like just give himself something to be himself. You know, and then still keep those influences. I'm not saying make radical changes or anything like that. And I love his wrestling. But I do think a change in attire, just throw a little bit more color. That's all I'm asking for. Like, just throw a little bit more color, get your own style, and I think you'll be golden. But I did notice that once again. I think I would like to see that coming forward to the new year. Find a little bit of his own color, his own style, and I think that he'll grow massively from that as a character. Not because obviously his wrestling is elite tier on this roster. I would already put him as among the best in-ring candidates on the roster so far, but I think that when you see that, I think that we'll see him step up, and I hope we can see that soon, because he deserves it, man. He's a great talent. And Zach, I do look forward to the TMDK thing. I think that was a great move overall.
Yes, I also think that it was a great move. It's not only that, but also the four guys, like Taichi, Yoshinobu Kanemaru, Doki, and Taka Michinoku, forming to be a new group. Well, maybe they are the same group, basically.
Yeah,
they
just like
stick
that
together. But the other one, TMDK forming, I think was a really interesting move, because Nichols and Hayes, they really needed something, because they were just floating around in this company. They, of course, had their gigs in the US part of the company, also got themselves over from a wrestling standpoint to the crowd during the World Tag League, but they really needed something that lit a fire underneath them and gets them more attention from the fans. And I think Zack Sabre joining them was a great move. And they then picking up Kosei Fujita was very interesting, because it directly plays into what Obari said last year during the G1, when he said that they need their young talent to develop much faster, because all other companies in Japan are doing that. Only New Japan and Noah are not. And they moved Kosei Fujita into this new role where all the other young lions, Oscar Loibe and Roy Oiwa, they really looked at that being something disrespectful to the young lion status, almost, because that guy is now in a stable without having gone onto an excursion.
Yeah, I think Kidani said that. Maybe they both
Akidani,
did.
Yeah. Akidani, yeah. Right.
Yeah, but the point remains, though, that he was right. So I'm glad that they took his advice to heart. And we're seeing a lot of stuff where that is one thing to take away from this show, is that definitely the upper class of New Japan, your Kidanis, your Obaris, and those guys, they're having more of a say right now in New Japan than they've had in virtually ever. Than just Gato getting, you know, doing everything his way. And obviously, he still has a voice. But we're seeing a lot of changes over the past few months in New Japan, doing things a little bit differently. And this was the follow-up to all of that stuff with Fujita joining this group and avoiding an excursion. I think it's a great idea. Obviously, his role in the group for now, even though it might not be an excursion, he's still going to be the pin eater guy. You know,
sure.
I don't see him just starting to pick up wins all of a sudden just because he's surprised.
Well,
you know.
maybe over his fellow young lions, he'll pick up more wins.
Yeah. Yeah. He could beat them, I think, but I don't anticipate him going on like any kind of, he's still years away from any kind of real push.
True.
Is where I'm going with this.
But
so
it's really, really interesting that he's now Zack Sabre Jr.'s quote unquote young boy. He even directly mentioned John Moxley, because he took Shota Umino, of course. And now Kosei Fujita being the young boy for Zack Sabre Jr. and being molded into a similar position could be very interesting.
Yeah, they had done something similar last year when he had the fake Zack Sabre deal.
Great stuff, by the way.
Yeah, that was a very good angle. Yeah,
it was against Evil, to distract Evil and Dick Togo from Zack Sabre Jr. sneaking up from behind. Interesting and entertaining stuff.
And a great callback on this angle.
Yeah.
I do got to praise this TMDK group as a great decision overall. Even though, like I said, I would have preferred Naruto just as a fan. But I also, just because it's not what I would have done, doesn't mean this can't turn out good too.
Right. Want to shout out Sheriff Lone Star from the True Penny podcast, because he said that he liked Bishamon winning the tag titles the most because he is a very devoted Chaos Mark. So shout out to you. And Dylan, what did you think about this tag title change?
Well, first of all, I got to give props to the Sheriff right now. We got to respect Sheriff Lone Star. Big fan of his, too, on Twitter. Good dude. I thought that match was really good, to be honest. But once again, it suffered from the getting cut for time. But the wrestling in it was really good. And that was the first match on the show, in my opinion, because we went backwards overall. But the stuff before this... This was the first match that felt like a Wrestle Kingdom match to me, and especially in terms of the crowd investment, because they were very, very into this match, and deservedly so, because it was a great match overall. I think if it had double the time, this is another one of those that would have been flirting with that match of the year level, you know, if they could have had another 10 minutes or whatever. But for what we got was great.
Yeah, to me it felt... very much in line with the tag title match on the Noah Budokan show, even though that one was longer. It was very similar because there once again, this was all action. They didn't do a cutoff sequence. They went just right in there and just went through it. Lots of near falls. That was good, by the way, also to, in a way, protect FTR because they got two really close near falls on Bishamon. But then in the end, it was Yoshihashi indeed that got the pin after the Shoto on Dex Howard. So great stuff for Yoshihashi once again. And man, if that's the role that they have for Hirooki Goto, being tag champion in the Tokyo Dome, there is clearly worse roles.
Yeah, you know, and there was an amazing spot where they did the suplex over the ropes with Cash Wheeler and Yoshihashi, which was a tribute to Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards at Ring of Honor. Yep. They did there. I thought that was really awesome. Mike said that's what you saw. There was a lot of big moves. Like, unlike that other match, the Noah match, I thought this was a better match than that personally, just because the same complaints I had about that match of it being too segregated in terms of the two singles matches, this was a team match. Like, both of these two were like great teams. There was no like feuding partners or somebody in Bullet Club or whatever. This was a team match, which represents what the tag team division should be, in my opinion. Unfortunately, the only issue with this match was that the titles are so low on the totem pole that you just anticipate them dropping them next month, you know, or like has happened so many times with these Goto title wins at the Dome where there's a ton of upside and potential to what they could do, and then they just throw it away in a month. And unfortunately, that's what I feel like could very well happen here, but...
TMDK is knocking on the door.
Yeah, exactly. They already set that up. So, you know, that could very well just go down the drain. But forever, however long these two have the titles, they will be great because they're always great at the end of the day. And they're two of the better wrestlers, like in ring still to this point, on the roster. And if you put them in a tag setting, they've proven what they can do. And this was another of the better matches. Like this would be up there with the junior match, in my opinion, as the second best match on the show. I just wish, like I said, it's still a little disappointing because you wish they had gotten longer because you know that they could have unleashed an amazing, memorable match. Like this was a great match, but it's not anything that will last in the world of wrestling overall.
Yes, it could have gotten a little bit more time, of course, but... Do we really need to complain about more time for the tag team title when the women's title match got 5 minutes and 47 seconds? Much like I said earlier, poor Tam Nakano, because she, of course, she did get a great entrance in the Tokyo Dome, yes. But she lost in a 5-minute match to Kairi, and they really tried to get as much stuff into these 6 minutes as they could. But given the fact that when they introduced the championship, they announced that the first defense of that title will be at Wrestle Kingdom. Given this fact, this match completely failed. And it's not the fault of Kairi or Tam Nakano. It's the fault of the format of the card and the time given to it. Because... hadn't they announced that this match is going to take place at Wrestle Kingdom for months, the anticipation, I think, wouldn't have been so high for the match. It wasn't like the most talked about match on the card, but still, they talked about this one for months and months. And then having that done in under 6 minutes, it's got to be a disappointment.
Yeah. The only... Like I said, the problem with this is that these two clearly did everything they could to make what time they had great,
yeah,
you know, in the match. I mean, you saw all heart, all action, big moves, you know, great striking, but, you know, the big back fist, the violet screwdriver, got a little bit of the crowd woken up a little bit with that. Just... This basically was what I feared may happen and why I wasn't as hyped for this particular match as maybe some other ones. Just because, you know, I've said all along about the title itself. I think there's a lot of infighting in the company about this.
Right.
And this, and like I said, I had anticipated something like this may be possible. I didn't know it would be this short, to be honest, but I did think it was possible that this would be the lowest time given on the card, and they would try to undercut it in multiple ways, pretty much. And that's what happened, you know, and unfortunately...
It's also interesting that with this decision doesn't serve anyone. I mean, they could have given this match a little bit more time, which then would have taken away from men's matches, and the men would have been pissed. But now, I guess all sides have got to be pissed because there was a women's match on the card that took away from the men's matches. But it was so short that the ones that were anticipating the women's match, including the women in the match and the Stardom promotion, they got to be pissed as well.
I think ultimately this was just the match didn't even matter. Oh, like really, it was more about the debut afterwards. And then, like I said, it feels like that this title is going to be mainly for the U.S. now.
And the promo that went afterwards clearly indicated that, yes.
So, like I said, it's clear there was a lot of infighting over the last few months, and it feels like a certain faction has gotten their way, unfortunately, and not the one that I wanted. But, like I said, I knew that it was a possibility that this would end this way. I said it literally when they announced the title. I did a whole show on the title when they announced it, saying that this was a possibility, that this would get undercut, and there'd be people that want to sabotage it. There are people that aren't happy about this title, and we heard that already, and that they would probably try to shuffle it off the best they could, and it looks like they may shuffle it off the entire promotion into America.
Yes. It's so funny that Mercedes Moné then came out and talked about the women's division. Which division?
Yeah,
it's no division.
It's a great women's division right now. 5 minutes and one match that they've had. Big women's division they've started there. Yeah, I mean, I thought the debut was awful. like all around. To be honest, no offense to any Sasha fans that may be listening to this, but I thought that everything about it was just bad.
Yeah, I don't think that you can really... of course, there are people that can, yes, but...
don't underestimate people.
Yes, yes. The debut really wasn't good. I mean, her attire and her hair, that's just taste. I don't think that you can really say that it was bad or good or anything. It's just her taste, and actually I thought it looked pretty great.
The look had nothing to do with it. That was the least of the problems.
Her coming out and delivering that promo, she tried to talk very slowly, but still, though, the problem there was, I think, that there was no translator for her promo. They didn't really help her with anything, and then the move got botched as well.
That was the biggest issue. So this move just was off. Like it was totally botched. You know, they were trying to do a gory bomb.
It was a Rainmaker kind of level botch.
even worse because ultimately, even worse than that because the problem with this is so they blew the move. She wanted a gory bomb into a DDT was kind of what she was going for, but unfortunately, it turned into a gory bomb into her kind of dropping Kyrie and nothing happening. But the problem is why it was worse than that other one. Is because Kyrie had to sell this for the next 10 minutes. But like of clearly this unimpactful move. And like you said, the promo was bad. It was just bad in general, but also, like you said, the translator was there. But yeah, definitely will not win any awards for her promo cutting abilities based on this segment.
And this is a problem that AEW also runs into from time to time. For example, on their last show in Seattle, they did. They have wrestlers do a promo that is not for the crowd that it's on hand. And this was one more of this instances where Mercedes said, yes, I'm challenging you, and we are doing that at Battle in the Valley. And what do you expect from that?
And nobody knew who she was in the crowd anyway. Like, it's clear that she didn't have any like big fan base.
There was a reaction to it. There was a big wow when the video played and she came out. So you can't deny that she didn't get any reaction at all.
I mean, it was a minor pop at best for like her appearance. Like, they did this little video and like to kind of, you know, mysterious teases, and then it showed her face. And yeah, there was a little reaction for that. But after that, there was no reaction.
No.
For her. You know, like, so it's clear she doesn't have a huge fan base in Japan yet. I mean, maybe they can fix that in the future.
Yeah, but is she really there for Japan? That's the main question. So everything that they are doing now makes us believe that she's more for the US market. And that also completely destroys my idea of them doing the title match in Yokohama Arena, because I didn't even consider the idea that New Japan and Noah would do another show, because up until this day, nothing really pointed in that direction.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I knew right away, like, she didn't have a fan base in Japan. It was going to be American viewers that were going to be into her, and it worked. Like I said, look at the world subscriptions. At the end of the day, it worked. So you have to give them credit for that, and it's probably going to help the San Jose show as well. For her, I think it already did.
I think Chris Charlton on New Year Dash said that they sold most of the remaining tickets.
Yeah, see? That shows you her star power in America, even though Japan didn't give her the hero's welcome that she would. If she were at AEW, obviously the reaction would be like a huge, you know, amazing moment if she came out on an AEW show. But to the fans in America, she's still a huge deal. You can't take that away from her at the end of the day. But she's not going to be for Japan, and that was never going to be what good she brings to the table overall. If anything, I think after this debut, I think people would not be as – if anyone was interested in her, I think they would be less so after seeing what she brought to the table in this debut. I do think that they will get a match out of her at least. I'd be surprised. Like I said, I'd be surprised if it was a long-term thing in Japan overall. And for them to even – her first match in San Jose is very telling as well. And I think, again, that's more of a consequence of people backstage than her, more per se, and the title. Like I said, at the end of this, even though I didn't think the debut was – like, I thought the debut was actually really bad, like, in every sense of the word. But still – I'm not worried about her because her fans will always ride with her no matter what.
Yeah.
I am worried about the title, though, because it's clear that, again, they slotted it. They told you what they think of this by this happening, how it has.
And it's they've done all these time limit draws in the last couple of months with Kairi. But now with Mercedes coming in, you got to think that she immediately wins the title.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Mercedes is winning the title for sure. But I don't know where can they go with that overall. It's just going to be interesting because, we'll see. There's a lot up in the air. You know, like I said, that AEW thing, they announced that someone else would be the mystery person
next
week. You know, if that doesn't play out and she's not coming to AEW anytime soon, then you have to think that her future may not, you know, may be in flux, more or less, for Japan. And I think no matter what, it will be. So I think that they're going to have limited dates. I think maybe working in Japan is a dream for her personally, like for a Japanese company. But you have to wonder how long this will last overall. But I do think that they will, at least on the Stardom show, they will have something for her, because that's been bantered about in April, rather.
And she said that she is in Stardom and New Japan.
And that's true. So how are they going to work this out? I don't know. But the debut was underwhelming at best, I would say, overall. And like I said, I'm more worried about the title than her, to be honest.
We actually flew over another botched move. We didn't talk about that. Tama Tonga defeated Carl Anderson. for the Never Openweight title. 9 minutes, 36, with, officially the guns done, but in reality, Carl Anderson shoved Tamatonga off him. Other than that, I would say that they both showed that they are proficient pro wrestlers, that they told a story. They did portray Tamatonga as the underdog babyface, and in some ways, once again, proved that he can get the crowd behind him in that role. Other than that, it was a fine Never Openweight title match.
Yeah, it was better than I expected, but nothing like...
Yeah, I wouldn't even say it overly delivered. It was just a little bit better than anyone thought.
It was better than Anderson's other matches that he's had.
That's not hard.
Yeah, like from Hikuleo and Tanahashi, I would say. But yeah, the problem with this match is the whole thing was built around him hitting the gun stun, and then it finally got messed up at the end. So it's like you built this whole match.
You can't even write that stuff. That's so incredible.
Yeah, but they made good backstage. You know, they're friends again, I guess. You know, so I guess this will be the end of Carl Anderson in New Japan, and that's not a bad thing, I would argue. Tonga, I always said I thought that he'd be a great fit for the TV title division because I think his style of wrestling is much better served for those quick match because his moveset is very limited. Overall, I think he has a lot to him that's good, and like you said, can get the crowds behind him as a babyface. He's very good at that. You know, he's proven that multiple times, and in this match once again. So I will say, like I said, I was expecting the worst, and definitely had no interest in it. But by the end, I thought it was pretty average, which I think is a better statement than I would have imagined otherwise.
I liked the opening match of this card. It was for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title. I was surprised that Catch 2-2, TJP and Francesco Akira defended their titles against Leo Rush and Yo. But that is also pretty good for the division, I want to say, because the champions were in the final of the Super Junior Tag League. It was Chris Bay and...
Ace Austin,
right? Name was escaping me. So they... build up Yo and Leo Rush as the challengers. They lost here in this match. Thought it was a good opening match. There was accidental blood, and apparently Leo Rush got injured here because he's now out of the Battle of Los Angeles as well. So best wishes to him for his recovery. Yeah, I liked what Catch 2-2 especially once again did in this match. Yo is in a great role right now because who would have thought a couple of... just right after their split, their Roppongi 3K split, that Yo would be in the better role compared to Sho.
Yeah, you know, Leo Rush injected new life into that guy. Like, with that tag team, Yo was doing nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, he's in a better spot now, but before that tournament, he was a nobody. Like,
yeah,
nothing.
Sure.
Like literally zero.
Remember that great Best of the Super Junior final between Yo and Hiromu Takahashi? Incredible stuff.
It looks like they're going back to that
as
well. But even then, like, that was the one thing you can point to at the end of the day with Yo. And that was a very good match. I have to give him credit on that. You're right about that. They are going back to that again. But before that tournament, he was still nothing. On the roster.
And it remains to be seen what he's going to do without Leo Rush by his side now that he's challenging for the junior title. He was in a good role in this tag team. Much like you said, put new life into him. But what is he going to do when he's on the stage with Hiromu Takahashi now?
Yeah, I think that's the question, right? But I do think at the very least he's gotten a lot more momentum than if they had
that's
done this
true.
without that tag team. And I think Catch 22 is like a great team. Like TJP and Francesco Akira, both phenomenally talented wrestlers. They were great throughout the tournament. And also did very good in this match. This match wasn't special, I would say, but it was not positioned to be at the opener. It was a solid opener and a good start to the show. The main thing is, though, is that I hope that Leo Rush can recover and be okay because, man, he really, you could tell that he put his all into this New Japan run to make something out of it because he was a fantastic performer in that team. And he's a guy that I'd love to see in Best of Super Juniors. If they can do that, I think he's going to be a standout player, you know, if he's in that.
I think a program between him and Hiromu Takahashi has a lot of legs because they are both so incredibly charismatic and, of course, great in the ring.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of great matches that he could have as well. I think he's a great guy to do something with. Just pull a match out. Definitely think him and Hiromu could be an excellent match. And that's the good thing about Hiromu, even though it's not very interesting just because he's been here before, he will always be a great base for everyone else to wrestle against and do a lot of great things. So, yeah, but I love Catch 2 too. Like, they're a great team, TJP and Akira. Hopefully they have those belts for a good while because I think they're great champions.
Agreed. We already talked about the Oleg Bolton debut. I think it's Oleg Bolton, and I think they just say it in the Japanese way because Oleg strikes me as a weird last name, but I'm not sure. They said Bolton Oleg. So good debut for him. He showed that he's already capable of doing some pro wrestling stuff with like running the ropes. Other than that, they did mostly amateur stuff, him and Roy Oiwa. So we'll see where he goes. Then we had the Rumble, of course, where it's always awkward that just four guys win this Rumble. Just four guys, right? Win this Rumble. The Rumble itself was awful. No surprises. It was just there to fill up the card with all the guys that were there. And then we also had the awful Antonio Inoki Memorial six-man tag match with Togi Makabe and Tiger Mask just completely botching the finish. And it was so amazing. Like, Tiger Mask was going for this victory roll, but Togi Makabe couldn't even get him up. And at the halfway point, they both just decided, okay, we call it a day.
What else can you do at that point? Well, listen, these guys aren't going to put in... You know, Makabe's not going to go out there and be creative or any of that crap at this point. But I will say the most interesting thing was Bolton, who I think is going to be a big project for New Japan. And he's definitely getting a big push in the near future. He's going to be a guy that they really look after. I know Nagata loves this guy. And a lot of people backstage are very impressed with him. So look forward to him getting a big run. Eventually, maybe not right away, but no. He's going to be a guy that they looked forward to sooner than you might expect for a young liner. I think he's going to, and the thing is that it kind of has to be that way. He's a little older than a lot of the other young lions as well. So I know that they're really high on him. So he's going to get a big run in this company. Like I said,
30.
Yeah. A lot older than the other young lions overall. So like I said,
around the age that Oka already was when he debuted.
Yeah, and I think he's going to be another guy that's similar to Oka, where they see a lot in him overall. So yeah, get used to him. But right now he's at the very, very early stages, so we can't judge him as a wrestler yet. But hopefully he can get it together and do a lot of great things. Like you said, the Rumble was awful. I don't think anything of it, to be honest.
No, there's really no opinion that I have of it. Just it was awful.
Yeah, total waste of everyone's time. Not even any surprises or anything like that.
That's the bad thing, because people really get up to watch these matches live because they expect some kind of a surprise. They could have easily like brought in Fujinami. Fujiwara, I meant. Yeah. Or Shiro Koshinaka. Man, Hiroshi Hase worked the Noah show.
Double work. Whose side will he be on in the New Japan Noah show? Yeah, bring a story out there. But yeah, you could have brought in anybody. Like, they're working with all these different promotions. You're telling me you couldn't have given a spot to somebody? Like, you couldn't have gotten Shima back for this? He was in the New Japan Cup overall. Just somebody. Just have somebody. That's the only bad part. But yeah, as a match, it obviously wasn't anything to write home about. The old guy's match was terrible. But the big thing about that is, it makes you wonder, I think why'd they do the Inoki call twice on the show? That was my question. I mean, other than Fujinami just representing him overall, I'd read an interview where Okada said he didn't want to do the Inoki call. He said that I'm not associated enough. It should be somebody else.
Yeah.
And then he just did it anyway.
at the end of the show. I think, much like I said a couple of months ago, I think the idea was that Okada would have gotten the title from Inoki's hands. And that's, I guess, why he didn't want to do that in the end, because the original idea, of course, fell through because he died. But I think they still made him do it because that was their original plan.
Yeah, but I just thought it was interesting that they also did it with Fujinami, the pre-show. It's like he did it twice.
Yeah. I think Fujinami, that's one of his demands, that he gets to do this when he's on the card.
There's nothing wrong.
No.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that, I would say, at all. You know, I agree with what Okada said. Like, you know,
another interesting part is that Fujinami even didn't get his son into the Rumble, right? But usually wherever Fujinami goes,
he was there.
Yeah, but he was not in the Rumble.
No, he was at ringside, like I said. But yeah, he wasn't in the match. Like, mm-hmm. he was just with Fujinami. Yeah, just as a manager, I guess, or you could argue, or a support second or whatever. But yeah, no Leona, unfortunately. But even that would have been something if they could have done that. I'm not going crazy over the appearance or anything like that.
Great surprise. Like,
yeah, I'm not standing up out of my seat thinking, oh, here's Leona. This is what I've been waiting for. But it would have been something at least. But yeah, need to learn how to politic better, Fujinami. Get Leona some spots in New Japan.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he had this match with Hiromu at the Takataichi Despimania show. Was good. No, at the Tradition show it was, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's Wrestle Kingdom, Dylan. Your overall opinion.
I thought a really good show, like a return to form for the company and a return to form for Wrestle Kingdom. This is one of the better Wrestle Kingdoms in the last few years.
Oh yeah,
I would argue. Definitely the Ospreay and Okada, or Ospreay and Omega match rather. That was the match that stood out and got everybody's attention. It was the best match on the show, almost you know, to me. And everything else was all very high quality, but I also think that a lot of it could have been better with more time. I would have taken a few minutes off of the main event and given it to some of these other matches. Overall, I think the show would have been even better. But for what it was, I think this was still, like I said, considering my hype level going into it, I think this definitely, the show as a whole, overachieved. It felt like a true Wrestle Kingdom for the first time in a while. You know, I put a poll up. We had a couple hundred votes on there, but like 85% of the voters said it was either B or A, like A or B on the letter grade. And I think that's true. I would probably give it like a B or a B plus overall, just because I think that the main event was not to that level to make it an A+.
Yes.
And I think a lot of stuff, like I said, maybe my expectations were too high for some of the other matches, but I do think that even though they were really good, I think they almost all could have been better outside of the junior match, you know, which I think over-delivered. So besides that, I think that there was nothing like, I thought the Mercedes and the women's match was the low point of the show, unfortunately. But everything else was at least, I mean, and the Anderson was also, that was not
It was good. Okay.
Yeah, it was average at best. Everything else was at least good, I would say.
Yeah, I also can't really go any higher than at cage match. I would probably give it an 8 out of 10. Got to talk to Phil to give me the possibility to give it a 7.5, because I think that's where I would settle probably. Because much of the show was very good, but then the main event, that it really fell off in comparison to the match before, and that's not never really a good sign when a show ends with the best match not being the main event. So that's where it really hurt me, or hurt the show. Mm-hmm. And but much like you said, it was a much better Wrestle Kingdom than in years past. And I think this proves that Wrestle Kingdom is a one-night show and not a two-night deal. And they should just stick with it.
Not true, Stura. There's going to be another Wrestle Kingdom.
No, Wrestle Kingdom. Yes.
Yes, they've told us that this other show is also going to be Wrestle Kingdom as well. So, at the very least, that's the way. Have a real Wrestle Kingdom in the Dome, and have a bunch of fake Wrestle Kingdoms that will, you know, you can satisfy your eternal need to have more Wrestle Kingdoms while also keeping the Dome show very special, which I think also played a role in the success of the show financially as well. I think if it had been a two night show, they wouldn't have gotten to 26,000 fans. I think we would have seen the thing split off a little bit from one night to two overall. So I think that helped the one night in attendance as well. So yeah, all about it. I think that you have to come away from this show more positive about New Japan going in.
Definitely.
Yeah, and so that's the best part of it, I would say.
Yes, absolutely agreed with that. I think they have a lot of momentum to carry that over to the next big shows they have coming. One of them, of course, is the Wrestle Kingdom in Yokohama, but also Shingo Takagi obviously challenged Okada to a title match. That is supposed to be happening at the New Beginning in Osaka on February 11. But before that, we get the Wrestle Kingdom 17 in Yokohama show, potentially a 17,000-seater. We'll see.
Stop right there, Striga. You have overlooked a complete, you know, I can't believe you did it, but I'm going to have to set the record straight right now. That is not just a title challenge. That is a champion versus champion match.
Oh, yeah, he has a belt now.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, that's another thing we have to mention. The big yeah. news of all of this, the King of Pro Wrestling title is now a title, actually.
There is no provisional champion anymore. He has a belt now, another ugly-looking championship.
Oh, yeah, awful. Like, much like the TV title.
It looks like the JTO title, to be honest.
This looks like something... You have to think they really cheaped out on this. You know, what's going on, Kidani? Like, don't tell me Bushiroad doesn't have the money to pay for a good title. Like, what are they doing? The TV title is hideous. And now this. Like, you couldn't have at least put the effort in to make a better title? Come on. Yeah, but yes.
This looks not like a King of Pro Wrestling title should look like.
I mean, with the prestige of this title, I think we all agree that it needs to be a high-quality title. But the funny thing is, at the end of the promo, Kanye was like, well, I started this whole stupid King of Pro Wrestling mess, so I guess...
Finally, he admits to it.
Yeah, it's like, I started this whole mess, so I guess we'll fight. So, will it be a champion versus champion match? Will they unify the titles? Could this be the end of the line?
Double titles!
Yeah.
The double IWGP World Heavyweight, the IWGP King of Pro Wrestling World Championship. Very catchy name.
Yeah, double titles, just like the IC title. Like, this is what it's going to be now. But instead of the IC, it's going to be King of Pro Wrestling title, I think. Okada finally... And he mentioned, too, he says, I've never won that title before, even though I created
it. Imagine they wouldn't have merged the IC and IWGP title to one belt. They could now have a triple crown.
Oh, that's true. That could be a future an idea that they could have. When they start a second King of Pro Wrestling title after this gets united, unified, yes. So that'll be interesting. But I had to bring that up. We cannot overlook Shingo is the King of Pro Wrestling title. We cannot let that slide.
But yeah, Shingo Takagi also on the card. That is happening on the 21st in Yokohama. We have a full card of 11 matches, two dark matches, or two matches number zero. It's Kosei Fujita and Roy Oiwa against the Noah rookies, Yasu Takayano and Taishi Osawa. Then Tomohiro Ishii got slotted in the dark match section as well with Oscar Loibe, and they are facing Masaki Tamiya and Daiki Inaba. Then we got some undercard multi-man matches, whereas the first one really caught my attention because it's Tanahashi, Toruyano, Satoshi Kojima and Takashi Sugiura. They are obviously teaming because they're tag champions. But then there is the Bullet Club team of Kenta, El Fantasmo and Gedo teaming with Naomichi, Maro Fuji.
Yeah, to me, this is just a match. They fit guys on the card that they consider big stars and put them in this situation. They didn't have another spot for them, per se. So they put them in this match, so to speak, against each other, which is, you know, it's somewhat interesting. You know, on this card, I'm not super excited about this match, to be honest with you. But
will Maro Fuji join the Bullet Club?
I mean... My God, that happened.
I was so scared in the opening match of New Year Dash that El Desperado would suddenly join the Bullet Club and turn on Minoru Suzuki and Renarita.
My God!
But luckily, they did not do that.
Well, that might be the most interesting faction. Like, we didn't really even bring that up. Was Naruto joining to Suzuki and Desperado? There. That's one good thing we too have to say before we get to the Yokohama show. New Japan deserves credit for actually finally freshening up the factions in New Japan. They've finally done some different things. I think that's a good thing. That might be the most interesting one of all if they can get behind Naruto. Naruto and Desperado as a team, I would love that. I think that would be a great idea. A great
team. Call me when they finally break up Chaos.
Let's not ask for miracles. Let's take it one step at a time. But yeah, so the match itself, you know, you get the big stars like Tanahashi in there, Maro Fuji, you know, Kenta, Fantasmo is a guy that you know, maybe they'll do something with this year in New Japan.
He challenged for the NEVER title, basically. Yeah. And Tama Tonga is going to be a program.
Yeah, that could be something they look forward to this year if you're an EOP fan. But in this match, you'll notice that a lot of the matches do have an obvious loss post, and with Gato there. Kind of a standout, I would argue.
Yeah, next one, not that obvious, I think.
No, it's pretty obvious.
El Desperado versus Yohei. That's really is in the middle of nowhere on this card, right?
Yeah, you have to wonder about this, why this happened, per se. But we know that Desperado is one of the juniors that really likes working other talent outside of New Japan as well, overall. So, you know, he's like a freelancer, like who's also a main New Japan guy at the same time. Like, he likes wrestling outside guys. So it's not surprising that they would put him in this spot. Why Yohei?
They like him.
Like, why Yohei? I'm not entirely sure, but hey, why not at the end of the day? They were in the same match together, too, when it was like Desperado and Doki versus Yohei and Nosawa on last year. So maybe this is... They're trying to, like, draw strings from last year to this year, pretty much, in certain cases. Certain I think cases, it's this one. Yeah. But, yeah, like, just... Well, we'll see if we can spot the lost post in these matches. Like, we'll go through it real quick to back up. The Young Lion match, I could see that being a draw, but I could also see...
No, Ozawa's losing.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Ozawa was probably going to lose. And the other match, Loibe is going to take the fall to give Noah a win. The other match was Gato, and here Yohei is an obvious loser. So, so far we're up there.
How about the next one? Yeah, Tiger Mask, Ryosuke Taguchi, and Master Wato against Amakusa, Yuta Miyawaki, and Alejandro.
I think that, you know, to me, Tiger Mask is the one that stands out, but you could also say Alejandro as well. This is a little bit more interesting in terms of who takes the fall overall. So it should be interesting, this match. It could be fun. I really love Amakusa. I wish that he was in a singles match more than anybody else on the show.
Destiny versus Amakusa would be much more interesting.
Yeah, but they wouldn't want Amakusa to lose, unfortunately, you know, because he's a champion. So that kind of holds it back. But all like the Noah team is all great. The New Japan team leaves us a lot to be desired. I would argue.
Master Wato has a lot of work to do in this match.
Yeah, like who you know, the other two I just don't think will I just don't think they bring a lot to the table at this point.
Next one is interesting with Katsuhiko Okada and Togi Makabe against Kaito Kiyomiya and Yoshiki Inamura, with the idea, of course, of the two champions crossing paths. I have a hard time imagining that any of the Noah team will win here. Probably Inamura will be losing. Because I just can't see Makabe losing.
Yeah, Makabe's the lost post in this match.
He really should be, but
if they were going to do them, they would just pair Tanahashi with Okada. If they were going to win, they didn't have to put Makabe. There's no reason for him to be in this match.
Yeah, it's true. But in most cases, the obvious lost post in these matches is Yoshiki Nomura.
I don't think it's impossible that he loses. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's like there's a 100% chance that, you know, because you can see that. I think that Kaito will pin Makabe and they will spin this into the next Noah versus New Japan show where they try and portray it as. Yeah.
That's the most logical reasoning behind that. But logic isn't always applied to these.
I'm just saying that I think that they'll portray it as like, oh, well, Okada beat Kaito in the tag match, but also Kaito beat Okada in the tag match, even though he won't pin Okada, obviously. Like, it'll be fake, but it will be like, I think that they're going to use it for New Japan. Like, if New Japan loses in these matches, it has to be for their benefit, ultimately. That's how you have to look at these. So, like, Maka, like I said, if they were just going to win, they would have put somebody else that they could get behind, you know, the team with Okada. Makabe has no purpose other than to be a lost post. So I do think that Kaito will win. But like I said, I still don't think it's impossible that Inamura doesn't take the Rainmaker at the end, which would be humorous. But I do think that, like I said, I think Makabe's loss will help New Japan in the end in their mind. Like, that's how you have to look at these cross-promoted shows with New Japan at the end of the day.
Right. Then we got the five-match series between Los Ingobernables de Japón and Kongo. It starts with Bushi and Tadasuke. Then we have Hiromu Takahashi and Hajime Ohara. Sanada versus Manabu Soya. Shingo Takagi versus Katsuhiko Nakajima. And Tetsuya Naito versus Kenno. So, Dylan, Bushi and Tadasuke. I think this starts out with a Tadasuke win.
Yeah, this is the only match I think Noah can realistically win. In this LIJ and Kongo series. I think the other one is like obvious that LIJ will sweep the others.
I think that Hiromu, of course, defeats Hajime. He's, of course, the champion and the bigger star than Hajime Ohara. Sanada versus Manabu Soya is an interesting one. Where I stay, that Sanada is the clear favorite, though.
Yeah.
Shingo Takagi versus Katsuhiko Nakajima. And they told this story that Nakajima said that he will defeat Takagi and then challenge Okada for the title. Can you see that as being a possibility?
That would be nothing 0%, but this is like that would be a stunning change.
I would say the Katsuki Nakajima from 1 year ago would stand a much bigger chance.
I think he would have lost almost 100% even a year ago, or 2 years ago, or 10 years ago.
A year ago, he was still champion.
I think there's no way he would have beaten Takagi.
Saying that he's beating Takagi. This is a match that I'm looking at that could potentially go to a time limit draw.
I think Shingo takes the fall. I don't see any reason.
Shingo takes the fall.
I'm just saying he wins. He takes the match, more or less. What I meant by that.
Yeah, and the main event. I don't think that Kenno stands a chance there.
That's the only one I could see them doing a draw on that one. To be honest, if they want to, because like I said, if you look at the match, and I was 100% accurate last year on the Noah New Japan card, because you could see obvious things like they do here in a lot of their matches. So at that point, you know, if you can, you know, if they do the Young Lions match, that doesn't even matter. The first match, New Japan's losses are all strategically placed to where it doesn't actually hurt anyone important in New Japan. If you look at their matches, you know, like in the first match, Louis Bay, okay, that'd be 1-0 Noah. The second match, Gato would lose. That doesn't matter. It's an interpromotional tag. Second match would be Desperado Yohei. That's 1-1. The junior match, you could go either way, but let's say Noah gets the win here. So that would be 2-1 Noah. Third match, Makabe takes the fall, 3-1 Noah. Tadasuke wins, 4-1 Noah. Then New Japan makes their roaring comeback. Hiromu beats Ohara, 4-2. And then Sonata beats Soya, 4-3. Shingo beats Nakajima, 4-4. And that leads to the climactic end of the card.
Yes, that could make sense too, yes. Yep.
Yeah, so like you could, it's kind of obvious if you know what to look for. And this match, like I said, I don't think it's impossible the main event doesn't go to a draw. At the end of the day, if you notice in a lot of the press conference, they even tried to steer away a little bit from LIJ and Congo. People said something to the effect, well, it's not just us. It's Noah versus New Japan. It's green versus blue.
So yes, I think but then they went to call this a LIJ versus Congo match series.
Well, that was at the start of it when they first did this angle. Like where they stormed the press conference or whatever for Naito. But the press conference that happened when they announced the card, they were saying it's not just LIJ versus Congo, it's Noah versus New Japan at the end of the day. It's blue, green versus blue. Although I don't really associate blue with New Japan, to be honest with you.
I don't know either.
But I don't think it's impossible they don't get a draw out of it. If Kenno wins, I don't know. I don't know if they would allow that, to be honest, overall. But I won't completely write it off. You know, much like, you know, Soy and Sanada, I think there is a chance they could, you know, do a swerve of some sort there.
I mean, Sanada doesn't really mean anything to the company right now.
Yeah, exactly. But Soya means even less.
True, but just for the sake of it being a utility match of getting Noah one more point, it's not impossible.
Yeah, but I think that they'll want it to be a draw heading into the finals. Mm. You know, mm-hmm. So if the New Japan team wins the earlier match, then yeah, count on this one for Soya to even it up. I think, yeah, because like Nakajima's not beating Shingo overall, and Ohara gains nothing by beating Hiromu. More accurately, they won't let Hiromu lose as a champion on this show. And Shingo...
But let's say Nakajima does beat Shingo, just hypothetically.
Okay.
That would mean that we would get a fresh challenger for Okada this year.
Oh, as a fan, that's a lot more interesting. If that were to happen. But I just, I'd be really surprised.
Me too. Yeah, just saying. You know? Kenno versus Okada, what's the chances of that?
That's something they could do down the line. I think that's more realistic than Nakajima beating Shingo.
Even though I don't really give Kenno a chance because I just can't see him winning this match with Naito, I think Kenno versus Okada sounds very interesting. Because both guys are very charismatic, and just Kenno is great at selling these matches.
I think Kenno has a much better chance than Nakajima to win, even over Naito, I would say. Because Naito, you got to understand, Naito hasn't exactly been the main event player for a while now in New Japan. Like, he's a main eventer to the fans. Like, you know, he's to the fans important. But if you look at how they're pushed, Shingo has been the much more focused on player than Naito. Because here's the thing, Naito has done literally nothing for like the past year. Shingo at least has been in stupid daddy King of Pro Wrestling angles, at least, which they value for some reason overall. But Naito hasn't done a lot. So
we forgot to say, by the way, at Wrestle Kingdom when he reviewed it, that Naito's whole idea of the last year was that he needs to find a main event role for Wrestle Kingdom. And he ended up being in the Keijimoto Memorial match.
Yeah, it wasn't his best work in the match either. So I don't think it's impossible Kenno wins, but I would say Naito's clearly the favorite.
Yeah.
And if I were to get percentages, it'd be like, you know, 60% Naito wins, 30% draw, maybe even a little more. That it might be like 65%, 25%, and then 10% Kenno would win. Maybe. But I'd give Kenno more of a chance than I think you are.
Okay. Yeah.
But I maybe look stupid at the end of Naito just wins.
Well, maybe we'll look both stupid with our calls with these matches. But that's the fun part of it. This is a 17,000-seat arena, potentially, much like I said. And the next day, Noah is running the same arena with the Muto Bye Bye Show, the Muta Bye Bye Show. And still at this point, Friday, January 6th, they have not announced a single match for that show, Dylan.
Yeah, we talked about this on the before we got on the air. It's just really weird. And I talked about it on the last episode we did, too, that I thought we would have some kind of hint on Keiji Muto's future over the next month at the end of the Budokan show, but they avoided that. And they've continued to avoid any kind of hint on anything, I would say, for their show. So
the question that I have is for Yokohama. Okay, so fans who wanted to see the great Muta got the chance to see him on January 1st in Budokan.
True.
What more appeal is there for another great Muta Bye Bye?
I think this show was not well planned out, first of all.
Yeah.
And secondly, I think that they're almost, and maybe they'll have something up their sleeves we don't know about. You know, and I said this on the air, they may be still negotiating stuff that for his last matches that we don't know about, and which it kind of seems that way. Maybe they already have everything set in stone and they just want to hold off. But as I brought up, they announced Nakamura months ago and that was super successful. So you have to wonder why they wouldn't do that if they had all their ducks in a row once again. But as it is, it's very weird. I don't understand why they're doing it. I guess they're really banking on Muta's retirement run in Yokohama being a huge deal. And maybe they're right, but this match is not going to be what the Nakamura match was, nor what his Dome match you would have to
not
think.
Not anything close.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Nakamura was as much of a part of that draw as Muta was, if not bigger, to be honest.
I think bigger.
Yeah, I think so too. I think you could definitely make
that case. On his own, great Muta is a great draw, but man, I think they are banking too much on him being a draw numerous times now.
I think that Muto retirement is a big draw.
Yeah, and that's why this show could be really the lame duck of it all.
Yeah, and I think it is. Like, I think that they're basically punting this show, you know, and just saying, we're going to kick this can down the road to the Dome. Mm. And now they put this whole thing with the New Japan and Noah show, which I don't think anybody really even thought about, to be honest, beforehand. But yeah, the Noah show, I don't understand at all. When we get a card, we'll talk about it, you know, when they announce something. But until that happens, there you don't. There's not much we can say other than we wish that they would announce something overall. Yeah. So if they do that, we'll talk about it. But do you think that the Noah in New Japan, do you think they'll make this an annual thing? Do you think they're going to continue on this path?
I think
like a New Japan versus Noah show, yeah.
I think it will, because I think last year was very successful and they want to go back to that. And if this one is even moderately successful, I think they could just make this an annual deal, and people will then at the end of the year always wait for the Noah guys to make an invasion in New Japan, or vice versa. New Japan make an invasion at Pro Wrestling Noah. So I think for both companies, that could have a great synergy effect.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they're definitely going to at least do a third one. You know, you never can lock anything for sure in these interpromotional relationships, because you never know who's going to have heat with who, or who's going to cross the line, like overstep their bounds and say, no, we can't have so-and-so lose. And that turned into a big thing. You know, you can't underestimate the potential for that. But I agree. I like your idea. I think that there should be something where a New Japan guy comes into Noah, or like some kind of invasion to them, instead of Noah just invading New Japan.
And they should really have a Noah guy in the G1 too.
Oh, I totally agree with that. I think that would be a great idea for sure. I think like I said, I think that they've set themselves up, New Japan has, to where they could bring a lot of different guys in, but they avoided that last year with the G1 to having outside talent. But that's something I think would be very interesting if they did that and get a lot of fans hype. But you look at this show, and that's kind of the goofiest part of all of this. This LIJ and Connor, and I think this is a big reason why they steered away from it, you know, in the press conference, why they just said, well, it's not really just, I mean, I know it is, but it's really more about Noah and New Japan. Because this angle is stupid when you think about it. This match happened a year ago. Like Naito even said in his promo, he's like, that was a year ago. Like, why are we talking about this now? And even Shingo was like, yeah, like, who even cares what happened a year ago and all of that. And then like Kenno was just saying, well, I won't do stuff on your time, I'm gonna do stuff on my time, which is over a year. But that's like, why would you wait? So like, you know, in the kayfabe reality of wrestling,
that's a really stupid argument.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why couldn't he have said something right away and challenged him to singles matches overall? So yeah, they have to kind of formulate that and everything to make this work overall. So that's kind of the interesting part of it. I wish that they would at least maybe not do another show like this, like where it's specifically New Japan versus Noah, but I'd like to see some more cross promotion over the year of people coming in there. And you know, I guess you could say you have Kojima and Noah, but he's not really presented as an invader, like, or any kind of heated guy. He's like a, you know, practically an unofficial member of the roster at this point. So I want heat. I want interpromotional hatred. That's one of my favorite parts of Japanese wrestling in the old days. I think that they can do that. I think when that main event happens, whatever happens in the undercard, that match will get a lot of heat from the crowd. Like, it is like the crowd will rally behind both of these guys.
I think also that Shingo and Nakajima already will have great heat. It would just be incredible if all five guys of each team would be ringside for all the matches. That would just help create more heat.
That would be cool. Yeah, like I could see that. I definitely think the main event is the top draw of the card. And like to the wrestling fan, like in-ring fans like us, I think the semi-main is the better match, like Shingo and Nakajima. But I don't think that means as much as the main event to the fans at this point. I think Nakajima is, I don't want to say a zero, but not a star, in my opinion. Like they've beaten him down pretty bad in Noah the past.
They have, yes. Yeah, that is as much as we can say right now, I think. Wrestle Kingdom is done. We are off to a new season for New Japan Pro Wrestling. We have this show still, and then next big one, of course, is the Keiji Muto retirement in February. One last question. Do you think it will outdraw Wrestle Kingdom?
Yeah, I've said that all along. I thought there's nothing about this that convinces me otherwise, especially after how, I mean, the only thing that would take it away is if they do a lame duck multi-man. But I, like I said, to me, this delay makes me think that they actually do want it to be a big match. Like they do take care. They don't just rely on Muto. They want it to be a true drawing match, and they're working very hard to make that happen. This is just speculation on my part, but I think that otherwise, if it was just going to be a multi-man, they would have announced it already just to get it out there. I think they want it to be a big match, and they're trying to make it happen overall. So I anticipate it. If everything falls through, I think it'll still be a very big, I think this dome show will be a very, very big deal. You know, you're going to have all the legends come out, Chono and these guys from the past. And Muto, I'm not a fan of his at all. I just wanted to make that very clear. Like, I know a lot of our listeners like Muto a lot and have great memories of him. And and don't care about any bad things that he does in wrestling or anything, and they just love Muto. That's fine. Muto's a big star. And that's the main point of this all. Whatever I feel about Muto or my being so enamored with his wrestling, I think that he has to be considered one of the absolute biggest stars in Japanese wrestling history.
Yeah, so no denying.
His retirement is going to be a huge deal. And I think, like I said, the reports have come out that even New Japan fears that that Dome show will outdraw them. And I think that they're right to fear that because I do think that – I think it was inevitable no matter what happened with the Dome, even though they did a little bit better than expected at Wrestle Kingdom. I think that that Muto show will be a historical event. I don't think – however many seats they have, I don't think a sellout is impossible. Overall, of the Dome, it would be a huge dream for that to happen. Obviously, if they have a big match, I think it's definitely possible. But I think just on his own, him retiring will mean something to the majority of not just Japanese wrestling fans today, but lapsed fans who will come back and all of the legends.
Yes, that's a great point. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. We'll see about that. Definitely, we'll talk about that when the card is here, and. So much from us right now, I think. I think we'll be back at the end of the month with a nice little project that Dylan has come up with, but I don't think that we'll reveal it at this point. We'll leave that as a cliffhanger.
Oh, okay. You do a little bit of a mystery right
yes,
now.
Yes, there will be a mystery. People. There will be a mystery show at the end of the month. So
okay.
I'll look out for that. Other than that, of course, check out the Patreon, please. Patreon.com/EasternLariat, where Dylan mostly does stuff with Yannick and Sondre Bjørn from Norway and from Switzerland, of course, about a range of different promotions from DDT to TJPW over Dragon Gate and Stardom. There's a lot of stuff on Patreon.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I'm going to be starting 90s Project 98. We're almost done with the decade as the year came. Lots of Toyota reviews on there, too, like classic Joshi written stuff as well. I also cover like the American big shows, too, like pay-per-views and stuff like that. Whenever one of the American companies do something, AEW, WWE, whatever, lately I've been doing the written more than the audio, but I will check in on those when they do them. And lots of fun stuff. Like I said, I'll cover some stuff on my own. Sondre's definitely been a good factor. Hopefully, love talking to all the good people of the Eastern Lariat family. I love all the opinions shared on Twitter, on the Patreon, on everywhere. Just love talking about wrestling to all the people out there. And hopefully everybody enjoyed the show and had a lot of fun watching it as well, because I think that they definitely had a really strong Wrestle Kingdom. Like I said, it returned to form, got some momentum. Noah's got some momentum coming after that big Budokan show. You see a lot of great momentum. Stardom as well, doing big things. Dragon Gate has a big title match coming up in a little while with Shun and Yoshioka. I think that's going to be a great match overall. Everybody should check out. DDT has this Young Guy tournament coming up as well.
D-Generations Cup.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be really fun when we see that. It's going to be really cool stuff there. So Tokyo Joshi Pro had one of their better shows in a long time, January 4th. We did a full review of that on the Patreon. It was a lot of fun, I would say. And lots of fun stuff going on in the world of Japanese wrestling in general, but especially in the world of the Eastern Lariat. So you got to go on the Patreon, Big Hosh tier. If you're just a Joshi fan, 3 Muto tier will help you, or American as well. You get a lot of fun stuff on there, though. But $5 tier, where you start the 90s Project, 98, lots of great legendary classic matches in that year as well. So I will be back very soon with that.
Absolutely. So thank you all for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
Streaming worldwide, this is the MLWRadio.com network.